a long time ago on a podcast far, far away. In the wake of turmoil, Ahsoka stands ready to embrace her destiny as a teacher, a guardian of the ancient ways. The time has come to ignite the spark of a new generation, to pass on the wisdom she has gathered through battles and betrayals. And in the shadows of a galaxy struggling to find its balance, a young warrior emerges. Sabine Wren, a prodigious artist and fierce spirit, steps forward to heed the call of the Force. Ahsoka extends her hand to guide this new apprentice on a journey fraught with promise and peril.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Welcome, guys. Welcome. We are, here we are, our second full episode in the Ahsoka series for this podcast, but we're actually talking about Ahsoka episode 3 today. So, pretty
exciting. Yeah, we had a twofer last week, so if you haven't listened to that, listen now. I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you didn't listen to that. So
that's right. Don't skip ahead. You got to listen to them all. Just like Pokemon. You got to do them all. Isn't that what they say about Pokemon?
I don't think that's the quote, Aaron. I don't think they say you have to.
You
got to
get them all, right? Got to get them all.
Yeah, catch them all. You don't have to do them all.
No, you got to do them all.
Do them all.
So, I was thinking, we talked a little bit about our Star Wars street cred last time, and I was thinking about, one of the things that is just really kind of synonymous with Star Wars is our Star Wars toys. And I thought we'd talk a little bit about what our favorite Star Wars toy is or was. And I gotta say, hands down, without a doubt, my favorite Star Wars toy was the Death Star PlayStation. Back in the day, and I want to say this was like Christmas of 1980. I think that's when that toy hit. I could be wrong. But it was sold out everywhere. Everywhere. You could not get it. And it was like back ordered. And, it was going to be spring before you got it. It was not going to be under my Christmas tree. And so my mother and I are at JCPenney's. And I am walking by the customer service department. Customer service departments, they always have stuff on the counters that's been returned and whatnot. And what do I see on the counter but the Death Star PlayStation? And I go running up and I'm like, is that for sale? And the lady is like, it just got returned. I haven't had a chance to reshelve it yet. And I go running across the department store, grab my mother, haul her to customer service and make her buy it for me right there. And my mother's like, but this is a Christmas gift. Santa might bring it. And I'm like, this won't be here in time for Santa to get it. Buy me this now. And so the deal that I struck with my mother was that it would go under the tree. I could not reveal to my brother that I knew what one of my gifts was under the tree. And I kept that vow and delighted in
to this
playing.
Day. And yeah, now to this he day. Knows the
and,
truth.
And now I am revealing it. Sorry about that.
All this time, he thought Santa Claus brought it.
That's right. All That's this right. time. But I got to tell you, it had the great big turbo laser gun at the top. It had the trash compactor with the incongruous trash compactor monster. It did not look anything like what you assumed it looked like. It had the great big long tentacle like snake like head with the eye, and then weirdly wings. but it was great. I played
the devil out of that thing. And sadly gave it away when I turned about 16, 17 years old. And when I gave all of my Star Wars action figures away to a friend's younger brother. And I regret that to this day. So, Paul.
You know, like we discussed last week, Star Wars existed before I did. So, really, my first entry into Star Wars were some of those action figures, even before I saw the movie, because my parents were familiar with it. My dad loved Star Wars. So we had some of those action figures. And let me clarify. My sister is 5 years older than I am. So she got to experience Star Wars. So it's not like I just came into being and there was no precedence before me of Star Wars love in my family. So she had a lot of figures that I just kind of inherited before I really knew what they were. But I will say my favorite Star Wars toy growing up was probably the Millennium Falcon spaceship. So,
like, you know, did you have it for the big one that action figures could fit in?
Yeah. And that's what that was my jam. You know, growing up, I loved G.I. Joe. I loved, you know, G.I. Joe is probably the closest example, but I loved when you could get a vehicle that also fit the action figure. Yeah. And, you know, G.I. Joe had some great stuff, but Star Wars had the Millennium Falcon where you would pop off the back half and the figures could fit in, and it had the little chest table, had the cockpit that you could open and put the figures in. I mean, clearly not to scale. Right. But I loved it. And, you know, those were the days, the Sears catalog days. So I'm pretty sure mine was a Sears catalog purchase.
Well, I never had that. I always wanted it. But I think my favorite vehicle that I had was the Hoth Snowspeeder. I loved that thing.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty sweet.
You know, they don't really make toys like that anymore. Like giant vehicles that actually fit the figures in them. Because, I think they try to make things to scale. And it just doesn't really work out. Right. But when it comes to the Millennium Falcon, I don't remember the last time they made a Millennium Falcon that actually fit the action figures in it.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't in the 90s when they did the Power of the Force stuff. So, yeah. I mean, I love, actually, it may have been. That may have been the last time they made it. That was 1995.
But, right now they have a HasLab program going. I don't know if you know about HasLab. It's basically, they get people to pre-order the toys, otherwise they don't make them.
Yeah, so they are the. I was going to bring up, Wayne. This is perfect.
They have them for, you know, they did a big one for Transformers for the largest ever Unicron. These are usually made for collectors, and right now they have a program going for the Ghost, the Rebel ship.
Yeah, and it's a vintage collection scale, the Ghost. It's Harrison Dula's ship that she also pilots in the second episode of Ahsoka. It met its target. I think as of the time of this recording, there's still about 4 days left in the project.
Yeah, so, and they've added the figures to it as well.
What's the price point to get in?
$500, Aaron.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. But, you know, it's, the vintage collection is a six or seven inch figure scale, and this thing is crazy detailed with that scale. Now again, $500 is crazy. And it's one of those things that, because it's to scale, it's probably roughly the size of a coffee table.
Right. Where are you going to put that damn thing?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and these are, the HasLab programs are meant for collectors. They don't run them on big enough runs to lower the cost.
Right.
So they tend to be more expensive.
Yeah. And just a little correction. It is actually to the vintage collection 3.75 inch scale.
Okay. So that's the original action figure then, right?
Yeah.
With the little push-up lightsabers in the wrist.
Yeah. That's about that size. But it's still pretty damn big.
No, that's awesome. I mean, I'd love to have one of those things. I don't know where the hell you'd put it. I have to move the wife's car out of the garage.
I actually have a giant Millennium Falcon and a giant TIE Fighter. And they've moved with me three times. Mm-hmm. And every time I'm like, where the hell do I put this giant thing?
Right.
You know, because they're so big.
Yeah. So Wayne, what was your preferred toy?
So growing up, I didn't have any because I hadn't watched Star Wars until I was a teenager. I did have one Luke Skywalker in the black robes, but I didn't know what he was. He was just another figure that I played with my G.I. Joes. As an adult, though, it's easily the all of the various Lego kits, particularly the
size Harrison Dula. Is that what it is?
Yeah, particularly I have a Lego Star Destroyer that's the biggest of the ships I've done. And I built it while watching the original trilogy again. That's how long it took, was all three movies before I finished it. It's huge. It's got, you know, all these different areas inside the ship when you open it. And I have it displayed up on a shelf, and it takes the whole shelf. So probably that, or every year for Christmas, my wife gets me the Star Wars advent calendar, the Lego one. So I love the little mini ships that you get with those as well.
You know, I you mentioned as an adult. So yes, as a kid, Millennium Falcon, that was my toy. Mm-hmm. As an adult, you know, I still collect Star Wars toys. So, you know, I think one of my favorite Star Wars pieces now is probably, you know, Sideshow Collectibles does these premium format figures. They're like quarter scale. So if you're kind of thinking like a 6 foot tall human being, you know, it's about a quarter scale to that, right? Or a 5 foot tall human being. It's about a quarter scale to that. And I picked up an Ahsoka Tano premium format figure a few years back, and it is just beautiful. Now, obviously, this is before, this was around the time Rosario Dawson got cast. Mm-hmm. But it's not of her. It's more of a realistic portrayal of Ahsoka Tano. So it's not done to the Clone Wars design, but it's not quite Rosario Dawson. So it's kind of this in between, but it's really, really well done.
Yeah, not counting Lego, the only figure or like mini statue I have. Paul, do you remember when they did the video game where they may had the little collectible figures for it? It was Disney Infinity?
Oh, yeah, Disney Infinity.
Yeah, I went heavily into those because I thought the little figures looked so cool.
Yeah, those were great designs for those Disney Infinity, and that was a great game.
Yeah, I don't still have, like, the game, but I have all of the figures still.
I think, long story short, the reason we're podcasting about Star Wars is because Star Wars has, well, other than Wayne, but as a teenager, right? I mean, none of us are teenagers anymore, or anywhere near teenage. you know, that Star Wars has been with us all this time, and I'm trying to think, you know, I'm buying less, but one of the recent the stuff I still kind of buy with Star Wars, obviously I mentioned the Ahsoka Tano, but I still kind of sometimes pick up, they have a, I think it's Hasbro, does what they call a retro collection line of figures. And the way it works is, you know, they started with the first Star Wars movie. They do them on the anniversaries of the Star Wars movies. So I think they just recently released Return of the Jedi retro collection figures. And it's a small line of figures, probably about 6 to 8, that are done in the, that are either recreations or new characters done in the retro style of those Kenner toys back in the 70s and 80s. And so I, you know, it's a very big nostalgia thing for me. They do the boxes in the old Kenner style as well. And they even do, they do a run for each of these Disney Plus series as well. So they've done them for Mandalorian, for Boba Fett, and now they're doing them for Ahsoka. And even though those toys did not exist back in the 80s, they are very much done in that same style with boxes in that same style. And so, you know, earlier this week, as of the time of this recording, they did announce that they were doing an Ahsoka Tano line of retro Star Wars figures, you know, kind of done in that classic style. And I'm sure I'll be picking some of those up. They're relatively cheap. They're like anywhere from, you know, 10 to 15, 10, like that's cheap. It, in today's terms of action figures, they're relatively inexpensive.
I used to pick up the 3.7 inch, you know, original Star Wars action figures. Those used to be like $3 at Toys R Us.
Oh yeah.
You know,
and now those execs, you know, they release, like Super 7 is really mm-hmm. good about releasing figures kind of done in that style.
Right.
But they're all like minimum $15.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, my allowance back in the day was $3 a week. And, you know, you throw comic books into that, which were 30 cents, 35 cents a pop. You know, it left very little for savings so that I could buy my action figures. Let me just say.
They were set up for failure, Aaron.
It really was. That's you know, essentially, you know, geekdom is where my work ethic came from, because I needed more money to buy the things I needed.
A job. Yeah.
That's right. Been working since I was 12 years old, just saying. All right. Well, hey, we've got a lot listener
more toys now to make up for it. Sorry. Yes,
I do. I have a ridiculous amount of toys, all in my office, because they're not allowed to leave the room.
kind of. So the more things change, the more they stay the same.
That's right.
That's what I'm hearing.
That's right. So we have viewer mail, Paul.
What?
Yeah. Our listener, Nick, had a few thoughts regarding the Ahsoka show and wanted to see if we had any feedback regarding them. So are you ready for lightning round?
Oh, lightning round. Okay, I'm ready.
Yep. Okay, Are you ready? All right. I'm ready.
So question number one. Is Sabine force sensitive? It seems a little strange to see her being considered a Padawan. I know she learned a bit about fighting with a lightsaber because of the darksaber, but I'm not sure where the show is going with this. Is Ahsoka hoping that Sabine develops a connection to the force, or is she just training her in the ways of the Jedi Order minus the powers?
This was a big one. Yeah, this was a big one for me when the show started, because I kept wondering, when did she become a Padawan? When was that a thing? I think at this point we know that she is, but she's just really bad at it.
Yeah, you know, I think Sabine, if I'm remembering correctly, I do think there were subtle hints that Sabine had some force sensitivity in the Rebels show.
Mm-hmm.
That could be, you know, just me remembering wrong, but I vaguely remember something like that. But what I really think they're going with, especially as we get into this third episode, is they're kind of going with the Last Jedi mentality of everyone has a connection to the Force. It's just about the talent to actually embrace it, you know, interact with it, use it. And I believe that's what they're going with on this one.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question, because, you know, I've really only watched season 4 of Rebels. Sabine has the darksaber in season 4 before she hands it off to Bo-Katan. How did she get the darksaber?
She defeated someone in battle in Rebels season 3. I don't remember exactly who, but I believe that's how Rebels season 3 ended, was with her acquiring the darksaber.
Yeah, wasn't it Darth Maul?
I think you're right.
Because Maul had the darksaber and he was leading the Mandalorians because of it.
So let me ask this, because in The Mandalorian, they say that the darksaber can only be taken through battle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why is Sabine able to just hand it off to Bo-Katan? Because that's what she does. She says, this is yours. Take it.
Yep. I took that as that was part of the reason why Bo-Katan ended up feeling that, going back to that idea of you have to take it, because she would just been handed it and then everything fell apart and she lost it.
Gotcha.
So because she didn't take it, she didn't rightfully earn it in her mind.
Okay. I can live with that.
They talk a little bit about that in The Mandalorian very briefly. Since Sabine like willingly relinquished it, they just kind of accepted, you know, Bo-Katan is their leader. So it's to your point, Aaron, it's something that has definitely come up in fandom. Like, why can Bo-Katan have it relinquished to her, but, you know, from Sabine, but Din Djarin couldn't.
Right. Okay. So question number two, where's Luke? I get that they probably don't want to involve him in the show, but I wish they would include some reason in the show why Ahsoka isn't seeking his help for something involving both the potential return of the Empire and the Dark Jedi. And I got to say, I kind of felt like the same thing in that we were talking about Dark Jedi and there are so few Jedi around. It's what, 5 years since Return of the Jedi? I kind of feel like there should have been a name drop of Luke. Like, you know, maybe we need to talk to Skywalker and get some feedback from him, or he's out of touch. You know, it just seemed like there should have been a name check.
So for me, when I look at it, I look at it from the perspective of, why would she reach out to him? Who is he to her? We know that they know each other because of cameos in Mandalorian. But other than that, he's some young kid that is putting together a Jedi Academy that is her mentor's son. She probably sees them as just this young kid. You know, he's not this bigger than life character that we see him as to her. She's been in the rebellion far longer, and I just don't see why she would go to him, because he's not anything to her, really.
Yeah, yeah. I have a little, I mean, and I don't disagree with you. I think where I come from as it relates to the Luke thing is, I just think we haven't seen him yet. You know, I think at this point of the story, this is a personal mission, you know, that involves the Rebels characters seeking out the ghost, you know, or seeking out Ezra, you know, despite all their, you know, protestations that it's all about Thrawn. You know, this is a personal mission for them. I feel like knowing that this is a buildup to that heir to the Empire, well, not confirmed that that's the name, but right. Knowing that this is a buildup to a movie, you know, that incorporates Ahsoka and Boba Fett and Mandalorian and whoever else, I just feel like we haven't seen Luke yet.
Yeah, I agree with everything both of you said, which is so weird to say. But I do wish, like Nick, that, you know, I mean, it didn't have to be Ahsoka. It could have been Hera. Like, hey, I understand, you know, that Skywalker kid setting up a Jedi Academy. Have you thought about talking to him? I think the absence of any reference to Skywalker, again, given that there are so few Jedi left in the galaxy, would have been welcome. You know, I think that would have helped. But I think you're right, Paul. I think the absence of it's a little conspicuous. I think that maybe it's because we're going to have a surprise reveal of Luke later on in the show.
Yeah. I mean, we're only three episodes in, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Of an eight-episode show.
I don't expect to see him at all in the show. I expect to see him in the movie. I think this is a personal mission. It's going to be the Rebels characters. But whatever comes out of this in the movie, that's where we see him come in.
Are you talking about the Filoni movie that's in development? Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay, so question number three. I hope that Zeb doesn't get left out of the show because he is a CGI character. And I guess that's more of a statement than a question. But any comments on that?
I would also say yet, right? I think now we know Zeb is very much involved in the Rebellion. We saw him in The Mandalorian Season 3.
Right.
So, you know, I do think at some point we'll see Zeb, even though, he's a CG character. So I think they are probably going to use him sparingly, but I don't think he's going to be completely absent. You know, he's working with Hera on the Rebels stuff. And I think we will probably, frankly, not see a ton of Hera, you know, for the next few episodes.
Yeah.
You know, just because, of what was set up there.
Yeah. See, I kind of disagree with not seeing much more of her. What I think we're going to see at this point is after this past episode, we're going to see the Rebellion, or the New Republic, is not going to help them. So they're going to, basically, they're going to have to do this on their own. And I think that means putting together the old gang, all in the Ghost, to go deal with the situation.
Fair point. Yeah. So I think what I would say is we're probably going to get an episode or two without Hera. And when she comes, she'll come with Zeb. I mean, hey, maybe that's just wishful thinking. But I don't think we're going to get out of this series without a reunion of all the surviving characters of Rebels.
Yep, and I agree. I think that's exactly what we're going to see. And it's going to be they're coming into the rescue because the New Republic can't throw any resources towards this.
All right. Now, fourth and final, not to be that guy, Nick says. But it's Ray Stevenson. I think he was called Ray Stevens a few times. And
I didn't want to correct anybody on the podcast.
It was me. It was me. I said it. I said it like, you know, nine times.
Yeah.
And Ray Stevens is the guy who sang The Streak. My bad. It is Ray Stevenson. And he's a glorious actor. Not to take anything away from Ray Stevens, who sang The Streak.
Two different Rays.
So thanks, Nick, for the questions and comments. We always love to get viewer mail. If you want to send us a note, you can send that to StarWars@IOMGeek.com, or you can comment on the website. And don't be discouraged if your comment doesn't immediately pop up. We do review those. We get a ton of spam, so we review them before they're published. So
you can also hit us up on social media. You know, you can also leave a comment on Instagram or something like that. IOM Geek, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
I believe that's called X. You can X us.
And, you know, the longer it goes on, the less likely I'm going to keep saying you can hit us up on Threads because, you know. I don't. That's a ghost town over there.
There's all kinds of wonderful things happen on Threads, Paul. All kinds of wonderful things. We've just chosen to exclude you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean that. Yeah.
Every time that Paul logs into Threads, shh.
Turn off the lights.
Okay, so let's get to business. Let's talk about Ahsoka, Episode 3, Time to Fly.
Kind of sounds like a Star Trek Discovery episode title. Because isn't that what she says? She says,
let's fly. Yeah. It also seems vaguely reminiscent of Serenity or Firefly.
Yeah.
Because he was all about flying.
You know, Ahsoka, Episode 3, you know, one of the comments I had made... In a not positive way, was that I felt like Ahsoka was a bit too calm, a bit, you know, she was the least interesting character in her own show. What I appreciated about this episode is we finally got a bit more of the Ahsoka that I wanted to see, you know, that I'm used to seeing, I felt, right. in this episode. She had a little bit more fire to her. She raised her voice for once. You know, she got outside in space, Aaron, and threw herself into space just to take out a starfighter.
Okay, can we talk about that for just a moment? That's the only complaint I have so far about the Ahsoka series, because there is no reason in the world why, you know, Dark Jedi Lady couldn't have just blown up the ship and not screwed with Ahsoka out there with her lightsabers. I thought that was ridiculous. If you were going to sell that, you had to show Ahsoka using force powers to shift the other ships. But she's just out there swinging her lightsabers around, you know, and that is a close combat melee weapon. I'm sorry, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you've got these, you know, hyper fast vessels flying around shooting multiple barrages of blasters. It really bothered me.
It was a ridiculous scene, but I thought it was cool.
I just didn't think they sold it.
Reminiscent of the, I think that is a scene that works better in animation. You know, that is definitely the type of stuff you would see Ahsoka do on like a Clone Wars episode, and it would work just fine in live action. It was a little bit sillier. I thought it was cool. And I will say the entire dogfight, you know, and the design of the enemy ships, you know, they really went hard in on that dogfight, you know, style. And I really appreciated it. I thought it was a well-directed, you know, space battle.
I enjoyed everything about the space battle, except for the Ahsoka out there on the ship. And like I said, if they'd sold it better, I would have been all over it. But you have to make the case why they wouldn't just blow the ship out from under her.
They got shot a lot, Aaron, and it didn't blow them up. True.
Yeah. One thing I did appreciate though was when she did the jump, she's then floating in space.
Right.
I did like that it wasn't just a jump and then immediately back on the ship, because there's no gravity. She's only connected to the ship because of magnetic boots. So I appreciated the floating and needing to be picked up.
I also a little frustrated with the fact that we didn't get to see how she deploys her spacesuit, because she was all of a sudden really fast into a spacesuit. And I'm sure she's got some kind of wrist thing that makes it all pop out a la Star Trek. But I needed that explanation because I'm like, okay, how is she already, you know, in a space helmet and space suit and ready to go out there? I need some explanation for that. It asked a whole lot of me to buy into that piece of the episode. It's my only complaint so far. It's my only complaint.
Yeah, let's rewind a little bit because I know we jumped to the end of the episode. We're rewinding here. This episode begins, you know, like Wayne mentioned, that, Ahsoka and Sabine are training on, what's the name of this ship, Ahsoka's ship?
Phantom.
The Phantom. Sorry. Yes, correct. The Phantom. They're on the Phantom. They're training. It's very Luke-esque,
Very much so. But I really enjoyed the difference,
right? Yeah.
And it was demonstrative, of Sabine is not connected to the Force like Luke was, right? Because Luke picks it up almost immediately. He gets shot a couple of times by the little dancing probe, and all of a sudden he's figured out how to use the Force to some degree, whereas Sabine is struggling with it. And I loved how Ahsoka. Essentially, they're essentially working with Bakkens, those samurai training swords, right? And she is walking around her while Sabine's got the blast shield down and, tapping her. And I loved how even though Sabine doesn't have that connection to the Force, she's still a remarkably skilled fighter and she can find the weapon. She can find the other person, even though she's not exactly force sensitive. I thought it was a really neat scene.
Yeah, I thought it was a really well done training montage. Like you said, I liked the similarities. I also liked the differences.
Yeah.
And my favorite part of it was Hu Yang.
Yeah.
Tennant's robot character. where Ahsoka walks in and Sabine's like, he said I was the worst Jedi he's ever trained. And he's like, well, it's true. I was like, this is great. I mean, that character, that droid is fantastic.
Who sucks the most? Sabine.
Why are you even here? Yeah. Why are you wasting my time? I used to train children, and you're the worst.
Yeah.
Well, that's something I'm surprised no one has said. But I'm surprised he hasn't said, you're too old.
Yeah, because that's what we normally hear, right? Unless you are a fetus right out of the womb, preferably 8 weeks premature, you're too old to be a Jedi,
definition of grooming right there in the Jedi.
Yeah, I will say one thing did bother me, though, is Sabine. And that's when they get into the dogfight. It felt like, it felt like they were treating her like she was a newbie. And that makes sense with the Jedi training, but on a gun on a ship, she's got experience.
Well, what I liked about that, though, Wayne, is that Ahsoka starts that fight, with the other spaceships, inflexible, expecting Sabine to bend to her. And it's mid-fight where she realizes that she needs to bend to Sabine in this circumstance. And I like that it wasn't just a fight, but there was character development through the fight. And I that is the kind of writing I love to see, that we use this not just for, an action thrilling adventure piece, but we're also dramatically building our story. I thought it was really well done. And again, with the exception of Ahsoka leaving the ship, I thought it was great.
Yeah. Kind of calling back to the scene with Hera, right? And her interaction with Mon Mothma, who's now the Chancellor, and the other senators
right.
in the New Republic. It's very funny to me because whoever's in charge ever seems like they just continuously make the bad decisions.
Of
Star Warsdom, no matter what time period we're in, it starts at the top, right? Man, the problem is with management, because you've got these chancellors, these senators who are like, Thrawn's dead, don't worry about him, it's not going to come back to bite us in the ass.
That never happens.
That has never happened in the history of it continuously happening. It was great to see Mon Mothma.
I really enjoyed.
I wish they'd age her up a bit.
I really enjoyed Hera's interaction with the other senator. And it's like, did you fight in the war? Oh, no, I didn't. So you just hung back to see who won? I mean, I was like, Hera. Yeah, it was a good scene. It was a good scene. And I agree, Mon Mothma, you know, does seem to be a bit ageless, which is good for her.
What her race is, but yeah, she's definitely, you know, I think about, because she is basically the exact same visually that she is in Andor.
Right.
And again, I appreciate they get the same actress. She is fantastic in the role.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is.
But they need to, you know, this is probably, compared to Andor, because Andor is, I guess, about 5 years, give or take, prior to New Hope. So now we're probably about 10, 15, you know, 10-ish years post that.
Yeah.
They got to plus her up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was a hologram.
See, maybe the Empire rebuilds, right?
Maybe there was a filter on the holo projector, you know, that, you know, kind of like Instagram. That's what I do too. Yeah, it's exactly what I do. Like, Paul, you take all the gray out of your hair. All of that tremendous.
How many filters
amount
would that take?
You got to pay for that one. It doesn't come free with the app.
Yeah.
So I got to tell you, I am deeply curious about the witchy woman. I need to see more
Elspeth,
of her.
Because, Morgan Elspeth?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by her character because I'm just, and I know we talked about it last time that there's a whole background about these witch people, but I'm really fascinated by her. And I really want to know more, and this has got me a little concerned, you know, since we know that Ray Stevenson passed away. I'm really curious to see how they resolve his character, and I want to know more about him and the Dark Jedi and what he's been up to, you know, since the temples fell.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but I think he filmed all of his scenes before he died.
Yeah, I just hope that they resolve his character and it's not like, you know, some sort of, you know, cliffhanger thing for next season.
Gotcha.
They weren't relying on him being back for more kind of thing.
Right. Right. But yeah, I love the how extreme the hyperspace gate is. And I was thrilled to see the space whales show up.
Yeah,
that was cool.
I love seeing them in live action.
Mm-hmm.
And the sheer scale of those things.
Yeah, I do need to see them tentacle somebody like they did Thrawn, because I need to see that live action, because I really enjoyed Thrawn getting all tentacled up in Rebels season 4.
Maybe he will have tentacles when he comes back here.
There you go. They go to the Cthulhu universe. Yeah. Yeah, we keep thinking happy, fun space whales, but no, they're really, you know, Mego. Well, anything else about Ahsoka episode 3?
No, nothing on my end. Well, I will say before we wrap it up, I would, if you're like Aaron and you want to know a little bit more about the Witches of Dathomir, check out Star Wars Clone Wars. I believe it's in the third season. There's an episode called Night Sisters that goes into the whole story of who those Night Sisters, those witches of Dathomir are. And it's all set up for when they brought in Darth Maul's brother in that series and when they brought back Darth Maul, because that's the planet he's from. So, if you want to know more, Savage Opress, that was his brother's name. Definitely check out the Night Sisters episode of Star Wars Clone Wars. And it's on Disney Plus, so you don't even have to pay for it. Except for the cost of Disney Plus.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you for that recommendation, Paul. I will check that out. Well, hey, we want to know what you think. Just like Nick, send us a note. You can comment on the website. You can send us an email to StarWars@IOMGeek.com. We'd love to hear from you. And if, like Nick, we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
Like I said, you can also hit us up on social media, IOMGeek, Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Well, good stuff. Well, guys, I am excited about what next week is going to be on the show. Hopefully, we're jumping off.
We're already halfway there next week. I mean,
sad, isn't it?
These 8-episode series are great, but you know, when they're short, because I mean, I think this episode was only like 32 minutes if you take out the credits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is moving fast. We're already halfway there, and I'm excited. It seems like we are building up the I'm expecting in the next episode or two we're gonna get like the big reveal of what this is all leading up to.
Very good. Well, hey guys, we'll do this all over again next week. Look forward to talking about Ahsoka episode 4.
See you then.